to Season 4 of Pathways by Grenadian STEAM, the podcast where we chat with West Indian professionals at home and in the diaspora who have worked in one or more of the fields of science, technology, engineering, architecture, or mathematics to understand what led them to choose the path they did, the successes, failures, and learnings they've had along the way, and in general, what careers are out there. This season, in addition to debuting full video episodes on YouTube and Spotify to help you feel more engaged, we will be including our members, both students and professionals, in the conversations, inviting them to share their own thoughts, ideas, and experiences on the topics brought up by our guests. This is in an effort to encourage and normalize discussions among people of all ages and levels within society. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the journey on today's pathway. All right, so our guest for today, Kareem P. Jackson, is a realist, a stoic, a global citizen, a problem solver, a product engineer, and a minimalist. He is an overthinker and an overachiever, a blockchain enthusiast, a curious mind, an adventurer, and we're still on the fence about whether or not he's human. His experience and interests in life so far have led him to founding Unplugged Media Group, which is an outlet for his passions and curiosities, a platform to share, communicate, and build with the world. Kareem believes in living to learn and sharing to grow. So through the technology vertical of UMG, which is Unplugged Digital, he develops the products that serves those roles. Kareem, welcome to Pathways at last.
Thank you. Thank you. That was an interesting bio. That kind of makes me sound more interested than I am. But
yeah, we're gonna dig into it today.
So how are you this morning?
I'm great. I'm doing well. I'm excited.
Perfect.
How are you?
I'm tired.
Uh-huh. I can see that.
Tired. I know, but let's do this.
Let's do this. I feel like I kind of voluntold you for this, so thanks for agreeing and not dipping
basically,
out.
I'm happy you actually shared that with the audience, you see? Yeah. That's good.
So she's it's an all honest about host, honesty. All about honesty.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. I feel like I'm going to be learning a lot today, so that's why I'm so excited.
Okay.
But we're going to jump right in, start off with a bang. So I'm going to ask you 5 quick questions just to give listeners an overall sense of who you are in a nutshell.
Okay.
Right? Ready?
Yes.
Okay. Where did you grow up?
In Grenada.
Which part?
Olio and Annadale.
Okay. All right. Now tell us every school that you ever went to from childhood up to this point.
Every school?
In order.
Now you're making me feel old. In order. Okay. Green Street. From Green Street, I went to Alpha. From Alpha, I went to PBC. From PBC, TAMCC. From TAMCC, Florida Tech. Yeah, that's it.
Florida Tech. All right. And so as a student, so thinking Alpha GBSS days, describe yourself.
Whoa.
What?
I went to PBC, not GBSS.
I'm so sorry.
Wow.
This is where we end the conversation.
This is, yeah, like,
I just disrespected you. All right, my bad. In Alpha and PBC days, sir, what type of a student were you? Describe
terrible one. Oh. I was a terrible student.
How so?
Because I didn't used to do well. Okay, I say I was a terrible student in the sense that, like, I feel like, and I was told this by many teachers, I never used to really live up to my potential. Like, I was a good student, but I was like lazy. I was like kind of the kind of student that kind of felt like they knew everything. So I was just like, whatever, screw this. So, so from that perspective, I probably was like a terrible student.
Okay, all right. But you did well, relatively well in school. or no?
I did amazing. But I could have done better.
Okay.
So it's weird. Yeah, it's that situation where it's like if you actually applied yourself, you could have done way better. You know what I'm saying?
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. All right. And so next question, what was your first job? Or you could think of it as the first thing that you did to make money.
I mean, the first thing I did to make money, I used to draw. Well, I did two things actually. When I was in primary school, I used to record like cassette tapes off the radio and sell them. Okay. And then I used to draw these posters and sell those too.
Oh yeah, an artist. See, I've learned new things already.
So I'll let the secret out. I'm not an artist. I used to legit trace the posters and then color them.
Okay. But, yeah. All right, a hustler. All right.
Essentially.
Cool. All right, interested. And then what is your current job or profession?
I'm a software engineer, so I work with like dev shops to like build products for people. Yeah.
Cool. All right, there we go. That is Kareem in a nutshell right there.
Basically.
All right, so now we're gonna flesh it out a little bit, connect the dots for the listeners, mm-hmm. you know, get into it. So tell me about the process starting out. So young, student in Alpha PBC, uh-huh. don't care about school that much apparently.
I didn't say I don't care about school. I was lazy. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see. Yeah. Lazy. I'm still kind of lazy. Anyway.
Yeah.
So he says.
So what was the process for you starting off? So at which point in school did you start thinking about what you want to do with your future?
I always wanted to make money. I feel like that's kind of been my motivation from long. And I never wanted to I wanted to make money, but I never wanted to work too hard. Like I felt like growing up, I've seen like people around me working way too hard and not having a lot of money, which didn't make any sense to me. So I feel like my whole thing is that if I was to work hard, like really hard, I have to make a lot of money. So randomly, I actually got into software engineering because I saw Bill Gates on a magazine once,
which is
weirdest thing. And I was like, yo, what does he do? Because I was like, that was like the first time he was the richest person in the world. I was like in late 90s, early 2000s. Can't remember exactly the year.
Uh-huh.
But I saw him and I was like, yo, what does he do? And then he's like, oh, he builds software. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do that. Whatever that is that he does, I want to do that.
Do you remember how old you are?
I can't remember.
Or what school you were in?
I was in PBC.
All right. So then, so early on, you had an idea of what you wanted to do to make money. How did you follow through with that? How did you figure out what you needed to do next?
I didn't really. So for CXC, I did a whole bunch of random subjects just because I was like, you know, I just have options. Mm-hmm. I did sciences, I did business, I did IT, I did TD and that type of stuff too. I did languages. So I had a whole bunch of like, four black plans. And then when I went to TAMCC, I almost did IT in TAMCC until somebody saved my life and was like, yo, that is like the biggest waste of time ever. And because it is, the curriculum is a waste of time.
Just doing it at TAMCC, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
and that's the next thing, right? So the whole idea of IT, so that's something that kind of irks me. In Caribbean, everybody calls everything to do with computers IT, and it's not the same thing. IT and software engineering and computer science is not the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Like if you go to a tech company, the person in the IT department is not the person writing the software. The person in the IT department is the person fixing your computer. Like it's not the same thing at all. So it kind of irks me when people say, "Oh, you do IT." No, I don't. Like, no.
Yeah, you chewed me out for that a couple times.
So like getting into TAMCCM, somebody advised me to get into sciences. So there was like, so to keep your options open, do at the minimum maths and physics, and then add on whatever you want from there. Because when you look at universities, if and any technical path you want to take in the university, at a minimum you have to do maths and physics. And then communications was a big one. I didn't even realize how much classes I would get out of from doing communications in TAMCC.
Really?
So I then end up doing just maths, physics, and chemistry, just to add an extra one, I guess. Why I did chemistry in TAMCC, I have no idea, because I was lost from the jump. I was like, me and chemistry weren't friends. Maths and physics, yeah. Chemistry,
okay. I was good. Okay. All right. So after TAMCC, you had your math and physics and chemistry on the side.
Mm-hmm.
What happened next? Did you go straight to Florida, or was there a gap in between?
I got an ultimatum.
Oh, okay. From who?
So my mother. So she was like, either you go to work or you go to school.
Pick one.
And I was like, she was like, pick one. I was like, okay. And I kind of did some research. I was like, what kind of jobs would I do if I stay? And then I was looking at like the salaries, the starting salaries. And then if like I was looking at teaching, and they were saying, oh yeah, you don't get paid for the first 3 months or some kind of ridiculous shit like that. And I'm like, I'm not staying in Grenada for this. I'm out. The option of staying was never attractive. It didn't make any sense to me. That was like the easiest decision I ever made. I just did like 2 days of research and I was like, yeah, I'm out.
Okay. So then how did you choose what school to go to?
I didn't. Well, I did and I didn't. It was the weirdest thing. I literally went to the first school I got accepted to.
Okay. Is it the only school you applied to?
No. And I got accepted to others later, but it took longer because they were bigger schools.
Mm.
Right? So like, if you apply to a small school, like they usually have time because there's like not a lot of people applying. They're always excited every time somebody new applies, you know. But bigger schools, you know, they think they're it, right? So like they just like take, they drag their feet and they take their time and they get back to you.
It makes you wait for it.
Exactly. They make you wait for it, which I didn't understand at the time. And probably if I had to go back, I would probably wait it out a little bit. But yeah, I just kind of accepted the first school. Just fine. And it kind of worked. Well, it's not worked out, but like I accepted the first school, but also that like I had an aunt that lived like 45 minutes from the campus, which kind of pushed my decision. Cause I was like, okay, well, I could always go there if anything and all that stuff. So I was just like, all right, whatever, let's go.
So tell us a little bit about what the transition was like. Did you ever regret the choice of the school you made, or regret not waiting for other schools to get back to you? Was it everything you expected, or was the course difficult?
I definitely regretted not waiting. But I mean, you know, they say hindsight is 2020, so you could always regret and speculate what could have been, but you really don't know. At the end of the day, where you end up is where you're supposed to be. So you can't really dwell on that.
Hmm. Okay, cool. All right. So what program did you do at University of Florida, and how long was it?
I did not go to University of Florida.
What did you?
You're not listening to me, are you?
My bad. It was Florida Tech.
Exactly.
All right, Florida Tech. I'm so sorry. What program did you do at Florida?
I wish I went to University of Florida.
Why?
Because UF is dope. The campus is dope. It's huge. There's a huge basketball and football program. Exactly. It's dope. I went to like a D2, went to the D2 school. Right? I literally went to school in the middle of nowhere with nothing. And I didn't understand the differences with teams. Because in my mind, coming from Grenada, I was just like, yo, it's every school is going to have like a big basketball team, football team. Right. They're on ESPN and all that stuff. I didn't know the difference. I didn't realize that, no, it's not all schools that are like that. I've visited like BUF and these big schools where when it's football going on and stuff. And it's crazy. Like the whole town is like lit, right?
Yeah.
So like I kind of envisioned that part of my college experience, which unfortunately it was, you know.
Gotcha. Okay. So quick question, not to backtrack too much, but when you were deciding on a school, did you have anybody to help you make those decisions, or did you ever have like a mentor or anybody in Grenada?
No, not really.
Okay, so you're just figuring not it really out so. On your own.
Yeah, so my father had a friend that was like a professor in MIT. So actually initially I wanted to go to MIT, and then my father had a friend who was from Barbados, I believe. And he was a professor in the engineering department in MIT. So I think he was like probably one of the deans. So he actually was going to help me get into MIT. But then when I saw the cost of going to MIT, I was like, yeah, nah, this is not happening. This is not happening.
Yeah.
But then when I found Florida Tech, I actually showed my father and his friend, when he looked at it, he was like, oh yeah, that's a good school too. And FIT at the time was a little more up and coming. They were kind of trying to solidify themselves as the MIT of the South kind of thing. No, they've expanded. They've gotten way better. But it's interesting to see the development now. Really.
Yeah.
So it was kind of just like that. And then just me and my mom researching stuff. And yeah, that's about it.
Got you. So you have been based in Grenada. You're not right now. We're going to get into that in a bit. But what happened between you leaving Grenada, not wanting to stay here and work, and going to Florida Tech, finishing your degree? What brought you back?
So now I feel like there's more information out there. What people don't tell you when you leave is that your goal for the, 5-6 years, if you decide to do a master's or whatever. Nobody tells you your goal for the next 6 years while you're in America is to get a green card get a green card, basically.
Some type
right?
of permanent visa, yeah.
Yeah, some type of permanent visa, right? So I kind of went into it blindly because I was just like, all right, whatever, you know, let me go to school, then came out of school, and then it's like, every single job that you apply to is like, oh yeah, are you a US citizen? Are you like, so then I started kind of looking into it, and then I went to the international services office at the school, right? And like I think they've gotten better of like giving all that information, but I feel like back in the day it was kind of hit or miss kind of. And then you kind of start understanding, oh, well, you need to have this, you need to do this, and you need to get that. So what people start doing is that if you realize the reason why there's more international educated people in America than Americans is because they basically try to extend their visas for a longer period of time. And that's what I've noticed, because a lot of, if you see, there's a lot of PhDs, there's a lot of like international PhDs, and most of them don't actually want to be PhDs. They're just prolonging their visas. That's kind of the thing. They go, they do undergrad, they graduate, they don't get a job. They say, okay, they go to grad school, they graduate, they probably don't get another job, or they get an offer to do their PhD and they get a grant or something, and it's like, okay, we're going to pay for you to do your PhD, boom. And the thing about a PhD is almost like a guaranteed green card from them, because like, You like overqualified for like the I can't remember the program. It's like super specialized. No, not H1B. Something in some profession. Like,
yeah, because right? Basically, what happens is you bypass the H1B lottery. Because
yeah,
I think you have to be doing research. If you're doing research,
exactly.
If you're like doing a research, nonprofit right. institution, then
yeah. So
yeah.
So PhD is actually way easier. So yeah, I was ignorant to that whole process, right? Until I did undergrad, graduated. Did my whole OPT, and then during my OPT, I started my own business. So some people don't know this, but you could actually start your own business legally in America during OPT, because it's work, right? So I started my own business, and then you could, if you do OPT the first time, you could extend. You get it for like a year, and then I think you could extend your OPT for like 18 months, I believe, something like that.
24 for 2 more years on two a more, STEM right. degree.
Exactly, on a STEM degree. Exactly. Yeah. So I had a startup, and I basically sponsored myself to extend my OPT.
So you didn't like go find a regular job. You just started your company on your own.
Yeah, well, because I wasn't getting regular jobs.
Right. So, right. Okay.
I had to figure something else, right? So then I started my own company, and I did that for like 2 years. But then obviously I can't sponsor myself for H1B. So that's the hurdle, right? You can't sponsor yourself for H1B, right? Like I could have gotten the extensions and all that stuff. But because I mean, it makes sense, right? Because if you could just open your own company and just give yourself an H1B, everybody would do that. Right, right.
True.
So then what happened is I ended up going back to school. So it was like, I literally had probably 3 months left. And then I was trying to figure stuff out, and I'm like, all right, so what's next? And then a friend of mine told me, he's like, hey, you know, why don't you just come back and do your master's or whatever? I was like, and then I didn't apply, I didn't do anything. And then it's like, it was like a week before school started, and my friend was like, yo, you need to come back, and because I moved away from Melbourne for a while, where Florida was, and it was like, yo, you need to come back and get back into grad school or something. So came back, I got introduced to this professor who's like one of my biggest mentors now, and this is like school starts today, so this is like Monday classes start.
Yeah.
And I told him like I want to get to school. And he was like, where, next semester? I was like, nah, today. And he's like, he's looking at me like I'm crazy. He's like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah. And he was like, all right, well, you need this. These are all the things you need to do to get into school. He was like, I'll make all the phone calls that I need to make and open the doors for the people who need to look at the application for you. But you have to make sure you get these by like tomorrow. I was like, all right, done. So I literally came back home, called my mom, say, hey, I need this. I called my father, I was like, I need this. I started calling around people for like reference letters and everything. I was like, yo, I need to get into school tomorrow. And funny enough, everybody pulled through. I was like, oh shit, this is happening. I'm going to school. So then I went back to the professor, and then he was laughing. He was like, so are you coming to my class on Thursday? I was like, yeah. He was like, well, it's either you come to my class as a student or you just come and audit, but figure it out. I was like, all right, cool. And then like an hour before his class on Thursday, I got an acceptance letter. Hey, congratulations, you're in. And I'm like, look at that. So I legit got into grad school in 4 days.
That's crazy. What was the major or the degree?
My MBA. So I went to do my MBA. Okay. So, which is unheard of. I don't know who gets into an MBA program in 4 years, but
wild. You do.
I pulled it off, which is cool. So, I mean, during that, it's kind of when I kind of start seeing the world a bit differently. So, which is funny, he basically bought himself a student for 2 years because now I owed him.
Right.
So, whatever he needed done, I basically was like his TA for like 2 years. Like grading papers and creating stuff for him. But it was fun because he did a lot of like consulting work with a lot of big companies around the area. So then I kind of got exposed to a lot of that. So I started working with a lot of those companies. And then I was like, the first semester in, I got an internship at GE. So my first semester in grad school, I basically started working full time with General Electric, which was fun. So that kind of played out well. Then, yeah, I kind of worked there throughout until I graduated. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Still going through the story. So you graduate, and then what? Mm-hmm.
Well, so before I graduated, before I even got back into school, I got arrested.
What?
So before I got arrested. So before I got back into school, I got arrested for driving while black. So that was another thing, wow. Right? No matter what happens in the States, if you're on a visa, if you get arrested, like your name get put into the system, your visa is automatically revoked. No matter what happens, right? So I spent like 16 hours in the county jail. And then when I got out, then I got my phone, I got an email from immigration saying your visa has been revoked, right? So that's the next thing. I'm trying to get into school with a revoked visa.
This just adds like more layers, because how did you get in 4 days with a revoked visa? We're missing something here. So listen.
Because your visa is only to let you in the country. Once you're in the country, I'm still under good status. But once you leave the country, that's different.
Right.
So my OPT and all that stuff is still valid. My documents and stuff are still valid. It's just that the documents that let you in the country. So I just couldn't leave. I was just basically a prisoner. I couldn't leave. Right? So before I graduated, my mom and my professor convinced me to leave. There's like, go home, you know, try to renew your visa, whatever, right? So then I was like, okay, fine. So I missed my entire last semester of school. Yeah. But I came back, went to Barbados, and the dude was looking at me, he was like, yeah, we have to get back to you. I'm like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
He was like, and I had like the papers from the district attorney saying, no, this was a mistake. He was not supposed to be arrested, all that stuff. I had like everything. Like they literally wrote me a formal letter saying it's dismissed, whatever. And came home. They was like, okay, you need to do a drug and alcohol test. And I'm like, okay. So I went and did the drug and alcohol test, came back saying, yes, he's not a drug addict, he's not an alcoholic. So I'm like, okay. And then they was like, we'll get back to you in a couple of days. So like, what does that mean? Do I stay in Barbados for a couple of days? Or it was like, we'll get back to you in a couple of days. So I stayed in Barbados for like an extra week, nothing. So I went back home. A month has passed, nothing. 2 months, nothing. So I'm literally in Grenada for my last semester, going to school from Grenada for my last semester of grad school. And I spent like 3 months, 3.5 months until my mom knew somebody in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and they called and it was like, hey, like, can y'all check this out for me? Because it's like, kids have just been here for like months, nobody's saying anything.
Right.
And then they contact the embassy in Barbados, and they was like, oh yeah, we had this, he's supposed to come back, and we forgot. So what? Literally, yeah, literally, like, I've just been sitting in Grenada waiting for a call, and they just literally forgot. And then they were like, yeah, he could come tomorrow. So I legit had to like rush and buy a ticket to Barbados. And they say like, come tomorrow, like I just live right down the street, right? Exactly. Like I have to get a plane ticket, you know what I mean? So I had to like get a plane ticket, go to Barbados, go back to the embassy, get it, come back. And then I was on like, I probably was on the next plane to America like 2-3 days later. Yeah, and then I was back. So I came back like probably like a month before graduation. something like that.
You made it in time for finals?
I didn't have finals.
Oh, just like a thesis or something?
Yeah, so I had like one class left. I was just like a paper, so I didn't have finals. So that was good. And then, and that kind of messed up my job too, because me being out for like 3 months, they end up like hiring other people and all sort of stuff. But then I would say about two, 3 months after me coming back, I got my job back. But then the problem was that the momentum I built before kind of died down, because they started going different directions with like the other people that they hired. So they hired like two other international people, which were my friends. But anyway, they basically put them on the track to get their H-1B. And they basically forgot about me because I wasn't there. Right?
Yeah.
So now I came back and I just had OPT, right? And then the next thing is I did an MBA. I didn't do a STEM degree. So I don't have the extension anymore.
Right?
So I'm just like, what am I gonna do? Da, da, da. And then after they was like, yeah, well, we're not sponsoring you at this time, whatever. I was like, all right, cool. So then I just kind of ruled out my contract and I left. And then I sold everything. So I sold everything. I had a car, I sold it, I had a bike, I sold it, I sold like everything. And I just had like a laptop and like a small suitcase. And I was like, you know what? I had like 6 months left in America. And I was just like, you know what? I'm gonna just enjoy the next 6 months. So I went on a journey. Like I started taking mega buses around the country. So I literally just took my backpack and just was just going from state to state, city to city. And then I met this guy who like he was hiring people to do certain things remotely. So I'm like, so I don't need to be here. He was like, nah. And I'm like, okay. So I started working for him. And that's kind of when I started getting to the whole remote thing. Cause I was like, yo, like I could like just travel and work. And then I started like getting into more of like researching different remote jobs. And I didn't realize it was a thing. Like it's a whole thing. Like there's like websites dedicated to remote employees. And I was like, oh, this is like a thing. Like you could have like a legitimate full-time job, like without the commute. So then that's when I kind of started freelancing and kind of building my portfolio, because it's not like in person, your online profile is everything, right? So you need to be able to like show that you have different things, show that you can do different things. So those 6 months I kind of just spent it just traveling around America, seeing the sites and like building my portfolio, freelancing and kind of just leveling up a little bit. And then I came back home.
When you came back home, sadly, were you sadly?
I was disappointed. I was definitely disappointed. But I came back home and I was like back home, like in my mom's house, back in my room from high school, and I'm like, I'm not doing this shit. I was like, this is not happening. Like it felt like you failed, right? Like, and it's interesting because I've spoken to a couple people who've like had to come back home and they had the same thing. It's like it feels like you failed, like you just like you really did it, but you did at the same time. But besides that, like I kind of looked around and I realized like there's no prospects for me here. And then my mom was like, my mom was always trying to cheer me up. She was like, hey, well, you know, you could, if you could figure out if you could get back. And I'm like, after a while, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to make it.
Enjoy a stay at True Blue Bay Boutique Resort, a family-run, eco-friendly waterfront resort in the beautiful island of Grenada. Choose between tropical rooms, suites, or villas, and enjoy complimentary breakfast, access to 4 pools, guided water sport activities, as well as the option for spa treatments, yoga classes, diving, and snorkeling trips. Relax by one of the pools and get drinks served to you from the poolside bar, or go adventuring the coastline on our kayaks, finding turtles, eagle rays, or even lobsters. Perfect for families, couples, and single travelers, True Blue Bay Resort has something for everyone. Email reservations at truebluebay.com for bookings and inquiries.
So I started researching more like remote jobs and stuff like that. And I was looking for what they're looking for, the technologies that they wanted. And then I kind of settled, because the thing is, so what people don't know about like, so software engineering and stuff, like in school, they really don't teach you anything. Well, they do, but they don't. The so basics. they teach you how to think. So that's the thing I would say about universities. University teaches you how to think, and they teach you how to learn quickly. So especially when it comes to software engineering, like they don't really teach you what industries use, like technologies and stuff like that. Because technologies change all the time, right? So they basically teach you the basics of software engineering, and then they give you the tools to be able to learn these new technologies. So coming fresh out of school, you don't know any of these technologies. You don't have knowledge of them. If you read about it, unless you sit down and like learn them on your own, you really don't know them. So like, I just kind of picked a technology stack that I was like, okay, which is the fastest path. And I started looking at like the pay for these different technology stacks and the demand. So like how in demand are these skills and whatnot. And I just stuck on one, and I was like, okay, I'm at home. I don't have rent. My mom will feed me until she gets sick of me. So, and it'll probably take a while. So I'm like, you know what? I'ma just, figure this out. So I literally sat in the house for like 6 months and just learned. Like, I just taught myself like all the stack that I wanted to master. And then throughout that time, I kind of built a small portfolio within that stack of like different projects. And then I just used that to start applying to jobs. It was just like applying to every single remote job in that stack. I was just applying, and I was using those projects that I built over the 6 months to apply. And then I started getting interviews, and I was like, okay, so this is working. Finally landed on one that was super dope. Salary was amazing. And got through, and then that kind of was my first pathway into working remotely, and then the rest is history.
When you first came back, you had stopped working for that guy you had met?
Yeah.
So you were starting from scratch, basically, locally.
Basically, yeah.
Nice. Okay, so it's all coming together. So you talked about, like, I guess your first time traveling like that and working remotely in North America, which is interesting because you're now currently traveling through South America and working remotely, right?
Yep.
And I know you don't like the word digital nomad or geo-arbitrage. So what do all those different terms mean to you? Because I guess it's something like the IT software thing. What do you call yourself then?
I'm just a person. I don't like the term digital nomad, because I feel like it has a negative connotation to it. To me, the term kind of describes somebody that's running away from something to get something easier, which I don't like that association, because I feel like I'm not running away from anything, right? Because it's essentially how that comes about is like, okay, when you see online, it's like, okay, you make $40,000 in America. On $40,000, you could live like this. But on $40,000 in Southeast Asia, you could live like a king. So you become a digital nomad and go here. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I feel like, I don't know, I feel like the whole, it could be just marketing right now. But I just feel like the way that it's construed, it just makes it seem like digital nomads are just a bunch of broke people that travel to live a better life, which I don't like, which is not true for a lot of people. There's people who built million-dollar businesses traveling, right? Yeah. So there's this guy who subscribes to, his thing is go where you're treated best. And I love that. I love the idea of basically you utilize the world as your playground and you go wherever you get the best deal, right? Like, I mean, just same as in America, businesses get registered in Delaware for a reason, because that's where they get the best bang for their buck, right?
Yeah.
So I like that, but I don't like how they kind of portray digital nomads as just people that, okay, I can't live like this here, so I'll just go here. I don't know. I don't like it. Like, I like the idea.
Like, it's not encouraging them to better themselves, but just like,
yeah,
stay where they are and go somewhere else to live better off of the baseline.
Exactly. That's kind of what I feel. When they preach the idea of a digital nomad, that's kind of what I hear.
Yeah.
So I could be weird though. So I don't know. But I just might. Just my thought
process. I mean, I don't think that's the overall way that it's looked at, but I see where you're coming from as a perspective. So, yeah. Okay, fair enough. Cool. So, well, two things. So what has been one of your favorite moments of your journey so far in South America?
Favorite moments?
Yeah. Mm. What do you like about it?
I mean, I think I like the anonymity.
Or being in a new place.
Yeah, although I'm black with dreads, we stand out more than anything. But
yeah,
like, I don't know, I like the idea of disappearing in different places. Yeah. And learning new things. Like, you learn. I feel like you learn a ton about yourself when you just kind of put yourself in uncomfortable situations all the time. Especially like if you have to deal with like language barriers, culture barriers, like you see how different people think, you see how different people address to different situations. You see what triggers different people. Something that you might think is not a big deal would be like a huge deal to somebody else.
Different culture, yeah.
Yeah, yes. But the thing is, like, at the end of the day, right, humans are the same on a raw level. Like, humans are the same. They just, I mean, some are activated differently, but like on like this lowest level, humans are the same. Like, there's nothing really special about human beings. We're all the same.
Yeah. That's so true. And I feel like it makes your life easier when you recognize that, because then it's like you don't feel like you have to act a certain way around certain people. Like, it's just everybody's the same. Like, no matter what level you're on, what rank you are, like, you could be the oldest, you know, most successful guy, but if you just talk to him like a human being, you know.
Bruh, that is so true. Like, and it's interesting. So I went to a conference in San Diego once. It was going to be like a whole bunch of wealthy people, and me and an old friend of mine, we decided to volunteer. Like, we legit just messaged the people who were running the conference. It was like, hey, we want to volunteer. We're just going to come work for y'all for free for the weekend. And the girl was like, okay. They was like, if you could fly yourself to San Diego, you're welcome. And we were like, bet. So we literally found our way to San Diego, and we went to work. Right. And we were working, we helped set up the event, we helped take care of the guests and all that stuff. But it put us in a very interesting position, right? Because we were part of the help. Because everybody in the event was like networking and basically trying to get something from everybody else. We are here to help you, so we don't want anything from you. You know what I'm saying? So we were like placed in like an interesting position where we could just sit and have like candid conversations with these people. And at the very base level, I don't care how much money you have or who you think you are, humans are the same. Like, I've met guys, like, they were like retired NFL players. They were like $1 billion business owners. And you talk to them after a while and it's like, yo,
they can make a joke.
Everybody's the same. And something I've learned too is that the richest guy in the room never looks like it, which is true. They always say that, right? But it's really true, because I remember there was this one guy that he looked at him like he was just like on a table for himself. Nobody was really talking to him. Nobody was paying him no mind. He wasn't probably the most put together. Everybody was like running behind guys in suits and all this type of stuff. And me and my friends saw him. He was like, you know what? This guy is an interesting guy. Let's go talk to him. And we were the only people that spoke to him for the, like the whole weekend, right?
Yeah.
And until the second day, and he was like the keynote speaker of the event. Like, we didn't even realize that. And like, we became friends. Like, every time event and stuff, when everybody was like trying to talk to him, after they figured out who he was, right? He would just call us. He was like, hey, yo, what y'all want? Let's have a drink. Let's go into weed. So he basically just, then he realized that, you know, we just came to talk to him because everybody else wanted to talk to him because they want, now they realize who he is. So they want to, he's trying to network with him. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Something I've also learned is that selflessness. Sometimes you just help people. If karma is real, I believe karma is real. Like, just putting things out in the world and like helping for no reason, things always come back. They build real relationships as opposed to transactional relationships. But anyway, continue. I was going on a tangent.
All right. Well, so we're gonna go on another tangent now because I'll take a left turn. So, in all of this, at least since I met you, you've been all about blockchain, NFTs, crypto, going deep into that kind of stuff. So firstly, I know there's a lot of probably our listeners and a lot of Grenadians who don't really know what blockchain is, maybe never heard of an NFT, definitely don't own any Bitcoin. And on top of that, they don't really understand that Bitcoin and blockchain is not the same thing, although they're related. So can you briefly explain what the whole world of blockchain and cryptocurrency is about, and then talk about how you first got into it.
It's about the future.
Future.
It's brief. Yes, it's about the future. It's for the future of money and commerce, but I think it's more than that, right? It's the future of how we interact with important entities, right? So right now, in the world that we live in, we depend on lawyers, accountants, and those type of professions to keep us honest or to get things done, right? So, like for example, in Grenada, you can't even open a business without a lawyer signing off on it, right? It's the weirdest thing ever. Which I think should change, by the way, because like in America, you just go online and pay $150 and you have a business. In Grenada, you need to go through a whole... Anyway, that's a whole different conversation. But so the whole idea of like trade across the world, commerce, notaries, you know, getting documents notarized, then proof of ownership, a lot of that is going to change and is changing with blockchain, NFTs, and it's like basically evolving. So ever since everything has gone digital, you have to kind of evolve with like, so owning your content on the internet, like who owns your content? Right now, so Facebook owns your content. Google and Facebook basically own everything, right? And you just by accepting the terms of conditions that you've never read, you've basically given them access to your life, right? So that's interesting. The whole idea of being able to transfer property, like who really owns a piece of property, who really owns land, houses, whatever, car, right? Who really owns these things? So the whole idea of blockchain and cryptocurrency kind of comes into ownership, proving that you own certain things. Proving that you're able to transfer certain things, even when it comes to like elections and things like that, like being able to prove that somebody's voted, prove that you're alive and you can vote, you know, no dead people could vote anymore, proving that you can't vote twice, you know, like the whole idea of some ink that takes long to come out from your fingers. it's an antiquated concept. So it's, it basically kind of revolutionizes the way that we interact as a society. It revolutionizes the way banks interact. Because, like, for example, the whole concept of clearing a check, like you have to send it to a clearing house, and then you have to prove this person has the money, and you have to do all this, and then they have to send it back to the bank. And like, all these concepts are like antiquated, right? So I think as blockchain and cryptocurrencies, as they evolve, you know, we would see more and more use cases. I mean, obviously there's a lot of scams and stuff, right? But it's less now, but they still are there. But it's just like, so they call this the whole Web 3 revolution, right? But it's just like the Web 2 revolution, which was traditional websites. So like Amazon and Google. Now, back in those days, in like the 90s, everybody had a pet shop online. Everybody had a bookstore. Everybody had this, everybody had that, right? And only a few giants emerged and basically dominated. And those are the people that did it, right? And then all the scams and the get-rich-quick schemes fizzle out. And that's basically what you're going to see with Web3. There won't be a lot of scams, but after a while, you'll see a couple of giants emerge, and then everybody else are going to kind of fizzle out.
So the way I kind of explain, like, blockchain versus crypto is that blockchain is like the internet, and crypto is like an application that you can use on the internet. So it's like,
true. That's a fair assessment, yeah.
Because a lot of people I've had in the few months that I've started like talking about it, I've had people ask me like, well, blockchain is bad because Bitcoin doesn't make sense, or it's only for the rich people. And so they completely like don't want to hear about blockchain because they assume it's the same thing as Bitcoin, and they've only been hearing bad things about Bitcoin. So yeah, I think it's important to for them to understand the difference and the potential.
Two different things, exactly. And so, why is Bitcoin only for rich people?
Because it's expensive. You know, like, it's just the way that people think. It's like people think investing isn't for them because you have to have a lot of money to invest. And, you know, that's not the truth. But
I remember 10 years ago when Bitcoin was 10 cents.
Right.
Nobody was complaining then.
Right.
So, but I mean, I guess that's with every asset, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anything that people don't understand, too.
True.
But on that, I kind of want to be devil's advocate a little bit. So you were talking about like the ownership of different products or items or whatever, and blockchain being able to basically help prove ownership. But again, a lot of people would say, well, how does blockchain help prove anything? Because it's just basically like it's like a representation of a real thing. Like an NFT is not a real thing. It's just a code that's attached to a real thing. So how does that prove anything? I don't know if you have the answer to that, but like, what's your thought process on it?
Yeah, NFT is a real thing. Feel like it is. So it is a picture that you take with your cell phone, not a real picture.
It is, but then you can copy it and send it to 50 different people and they all have the same picture.
But can you prove to those 50 different people where it initially came from?
I don't know. I mean, there's like geotags on pictures now, right? And you can see.
Right. But can you prove? Yeah, but you could change that. Somebody could change that. Could alter that.
Okay.
If I send you a picture today and it says it has a watermark and it says Kareem Jackson, you could go to Photoshop and take the watermark off, can't you?
Yeah.
You can't do that with an NFT. So the whole idea of copyright laws, like everybody says, not a real thing, but you upload millions of pictures a day, so that means you'll be uploading fake shit all your life then. Is this video a real thing? We're doing a podcast, right? We're recording something. Is this a real thing? It must be fake, right? So then that's why the whole concept of is an NFT a real thing? Ridiculous, do you think? The whole idea of the NFTs is ownership and transferability, right? So for example, music. So if I'm an artist and I release an album, right? How do you know I'm the one that owns this album? The only people that really know who owns a piece of music is like the music company, right? Because for all you know, the artists themselves, they probably own 10% of that album, right? The other 90% is probably owned by the record label, or 50% by the record label. The producers probably have 10, whoever, right? You don't know. We, like, on the surface, we really don't know who owns a song, right?
But you could technically do the same thing with an NFT, because the NFT still has to be minted or created, turned into an NFT.
Right.
So I all could right. steal your song and say that I'm going to go mint it as my NFT. No?
No.
Why not?
No. I mean, that is an interesting thought. In theory, yes, you could probably steal my song. But where are you minting? So it depends on where you're minting, right? So I think... a lot of these marketplaces, you kind of have to go through a process before certain things are minted, right? But that's an interesting point. I need to think about that a little bit. Can you? But I mean, you can't. You can't take a Michael Jackson song and put it up and mint it as an NFT and tell people, "Hey, I own this." Like,
no, because everybody knows Michael Jackson. But if nobody knows you,
right.
You're an up and coming artist.
That's true.
And
that's true.
Steal it. Mm-hmm. But
that's true.
Like rebutting against myself in the same sentence. So maybe if we were lived in a perfect world where, you know, everything was done on the blockchain from go, mm-hmm. then if I create mm-hmm. something on the blockchain, then it's saved in
that's yours.
There.
Exactly.
And
then you could go through the ledger and you could say, okay, this was originally created by Arlene. So
the problem comes in where we try to merge Web 2 and Web 3, I guess.
It's true.
Where we are now.
This is true, exactly. And in a perfect world, the whole idea of international commerce is solved, right? Like, it's like logistics. If you have logistics on a blockchain, you know exactly where something is at any particular time and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's. I guess you have to work out the kinks and answer these questions as you go along the way to kind of figure out how best to use the blockchain to fix these solutions. Yeah.
Yep. And what people don't understand too is like, this is how things always happen. Like when the internet first came out, nobody knew what they were doing either. But we figured it out and now it works.
I mean, I honestly feel nobody still knows what they're doing. They're just winging it.
True. That's life in general.
I feel like nobody knows. I feel like Google and all these guys, they have no idea what they're doing. They're just winging it day by day, and they just have a lot of money to throw behind things.
Oh, you know, that's why you have to make that money so you could do that too.
I know, right? I know. That's true.
Oof. All right. So there's a lot. See, you say you're not an interesting guy. I don't think anybody could listen to this and say that wasn't interesting. But anyway,
my goal in life is to disappear.
Yeah.
So
keep trying. All right. Where do you see yourself in all of this, everything that brought you to where you are now? Where do you see yourself going? What are you working on right now? Where do you see yourself going in the next 5-10 years? We didn't even talk about Unplugged Media, but spoiler alert.
5-10 years. Mm-hmm. So I want to be a global citizen in the next 5-10 years.
You're not already?
I don't feel like that.
Would take you to that level?
My ultimate goal in life is to own property on every continent.
Yo. Same. Well, not same, but more than one continent.
So, no, every continent. I want to be able to I want to be able to go to Mexico if I want tacos and have a house there.
Yeah. If you want tacos, kind of, just wake up in the morning and tell your private jet, hey, we're going to Mexico for a couple hours.
Yeah, because I want tacos. I want to fly to Italy for pizza. Nice. Like that's kind of my goal in life. You know, I want to go on the Mediterranean if I want to get some hummus. That's kind of how I feel.
Right.
Owning like properties every continent, rent them out when I'm not there. And when I'm there, I have a place to stay. Like, I like to have a home. Like, I want a space that I feel like is mine. Like, a space that I feel like is functional for me.
Okay. I see it. So, we'll check back in 10 years. See how many continents you have conquered.
Check back in 10 years. I got you.
Cool. All right. So, last question. If you could go back in time, when you build your time machine, you could go back to you at age 15, 18, or 25. So pick one of those ages. If you could go back and talk to that version of yourself, what advice would you give to him?
It's an interesting question. At 25, I'll probably tell myself it's gonna be okay.
Good question.
I'll probably say it'll be alright. At 25.
Yeah, I mean that's actually a good point because I think a lot of 25-year-olds. I'm not far from 25, but a lot of 25-year-olds feel like this is it. My life is over. Like if I don't have it figured out now, then we're done.
Yeah.
And that's not true.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I mean, okay. I think it's social media. Yeah. People don't believe it, but it really is social media.
Yeah, the fact because I don't think like previous generations had this kind of anxiety over what they're doing with their life because they didn't get to see what everybody else was doing with their life.
Exactly. It definitely has kind of upped the anxiety in young people, but I think it also make them more motivated, but depends. I guess it depends how you take it.
Yeah. Everyone's different on how they'll react to it, but it definitely adds a layer of pressure.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. All right. Well, Kareem, I know you're a busy guy, so I'm going to let you get back to your life and to your work. But this was a good conversation. I think so. Thanks for taking the time.
You are welcome. Well, thank you for volunteering me.
Anytime. Keep listening. We'll be right back after a short break. This season of Pathways is brought to you by Telesford Countertop and General Construction Services, your number one source for quartz and solid surface. Their services are not only limited to countertops, their team builds homes, cabinets, vanities, does 3D images, renovations, and quantity estimates. Telesford Countertop and General Construction Services' mission statement is pride and delivery upon customer satisfaction. Contact them today at 435-0133 to get started on your construction project.
My name is Anthony Benjamin. I'm a computer science at Beijing University of Technology.
I graduated from GBSS.
Ooh.
My name is Corey Joseph. I'm a student at TAPCC, currently studying building technology. I wish to be a civil engineer in the future, and I am a past student of the Presentation Brothers College.
All right, so we just took a look at some of the footage from that previous interview I did with Kareem. What are some thoughts you guys have off the bat?
Okay, my first word to that whole story, that's crazy. I mean, to get into, like, be quite strategic to go ahead and get what you want.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, he mentioned a lot of strategy to this thing, and I think it doesn't really have much information on that for a lot of people, you know?
Yeah. So he mentioned, like, the International Student Center, which depending on the school you go to, sometimes it's really good. Usually the bigger schools or schools that have a lot more international students coming in mm-hmm. have like a pretty robust program. So like they would have special seminars and so for international students. So like the school I went to at the time had a lot of international students.
Yeah.
So they informed us pretty well on what to expect in terms of like you need to do this stuff to keep your visa in check, and you need to like these are the type of jobs you can get, blah blah blah, ways to get around the system. But yeah, if you don't know, or like a lot of instances you could be the only international student at a school
mm-hmm.
and then you're just lost because none of the other students would understand what you're going through.
Yeah, for real. I think it's better now
mm-hmm.
as an international student, like yeah. they have all these resources to you
right.
in university, like the university I go to, they have an international students department and there's a lot of international students there. So, I mean, they actually brought in people to talk to us on how to get jobs now. But yeah, I mean, I'm across here, so, you know.
yeah, you don't need them.
Well, I think he's a very interesting fellow.
He would love to hear that because he doesn't think he is.
He's very interesting. His story doesn't sound... He makes it out to be very bland, but his story is a kind of roller coaster. You know?
Yeah.
I think he's very diligent and he persevered through a lot of things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he went to jail and his immediate thought process was, they can't kick me out of the country because my visa is only to enter the country.
Yeah.
I think that's some quick thinking. He's just impressive. He had me baffled the entire interview. I was just wondering, this guy, I'm trying to get into this guy's brain.
Yeah.
And figure out what is he thinking? What's his thought process like? Yeah. I really want to talk with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe we could set that up. So, Corey, you're at the point where you're looking at universities now,
yes,
right? So, what was your takeaway from that?
I am looking into universities, but not anytime in the very near future, as in, this year or next year, probably the next 2-3 years down the line, I would be looking to go to university. I'm not sure I'm at the level of maturity where I could go to university and be independent, like on that level.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a lot of people get it twisted and they just jump into university when they're not at that level of maturity to be independent and take responsibility for themselves and take responsibility for their decisions. So before I go to university, I plan to do a lot of development, personal development, build on my personal skills,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll go to university. But for now, I'm taking it step by step, taking feasible steps to reach my goal. His journey to university was kind of an odd one, especially for his time. I don't think at the time students were just out of time to see into university.
I think they were. He may not be as old as you think.
he was making himself out to be
to seem old. Yeah, he's like mid-30s probably.
Mid-30s, early mid-30s.
I am thinking about university, but my journey may be significantly different, would be significantly different from his.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like it shows a sign of maturity, just you saying that you're not ready to go into school yet. So that's good. So I spent 2 years after TAMCC before I went to university, and I had friends who graduated TAMCC with me and went directly to university. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we both did just as well, but personally, I liked it. I guess there's two sides of the coin. So on one hand, like I was definitely a little bit more mature. I went to school in the US, right. So by the time I moved there, I was already 21. You know what that means.
Yes,
I'm the same. And I had friends who were like 18, couldn't get into clubs and stuff like that. So that sucked. But it also meant that I was ahead of all the other students. I had an age from mm-hmm. all the other students at my level in university. Because in the U.S., you usually go straight from high school into college.
Yeah,
so everyone was like 18, that's very young, very immature.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was just like, I don't have time for this.
Yes.
So that disconnect definitely showed. It might also just be my personality. But yeah, there's two sides of the coin. Like, some people would say, I just want to get it over with. And if you know what you want to go and go do, especially if you're trying to get into med school or something and you have a track that you're on. But I think it's great to take some time and figure yourself out before you jump in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really important. I think more and more people are starting to worry about the finances as well. Mm-hmm. How are they going to fund themselves?
Yes.
Going to university.
Yeah.
So a lot of people may choose to opt to go work and save up. Some others, they may be able to go straight. Maybe they have the funds or a scholarship, mm-hmm. or whatever. So I think a lot of people, or at least a lot of my peers, it's not that they don't want to go to university, is that there's not many options.
Yeah.
Is that how you go the government route? You take the government scholarship. That's mm-hmm. if you qualify for it, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Based on your demographics, based on your parents' income,
mm-hmm.
Or you go work and you save up for it, you take a loan or something like that, and you go to a university.
Yeah.
And even that in itself is a big risk, because let's say you go to St. George's University, but what they have, what you want to do, it may not be credited, or mm-hmm. it may not be recognized by yep. The accreditation board in the Caribbean or in any region for that matter. So you're just doing a course and it's not credited at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, which I think that's something you need to look into a bit more. Probably introduce some more a bit more engineering or architecture,
yeah.
something like that. It doesn't have to be much. Probably even at the associate's degree level. I think that would be pretty. That would be nice. Yeah.
Maybe you should talk to somebody. But no, it's. I guess, like they say, everyone has their own path, and you have to figure out what makes sense for you. Because I can only speak from my experience. But when I was trying to figure out where to go for school, it was just like, okay, I knew I wanted to do architecture. And so SGU was immediately mm-hmm. off the bat. Like, I looked, but I was like, there's nothing here to get me into architecture. The next closest thing was UTEC in Jamaica, which has a really good architecture program. And then I had to consider, you know, scholarships. Where am I getting funding from? How much can I afford? How much scholarship would they give me? And how much do I need to pay out of pocket? And all of that stuff. And I guess, why did I choose to work first? I think I just got a decent job offer after job training at MCC.
Yeah.
And so I figured I'd just do that for a while. And I didn't know where I wanted to go to school yet. So I was just like, yeah, I'll do this for a couple of years and then find my way.
Yeah, well, my choice to work, it actually came from one of my teachers. So they basically told me, okay, take a while, rest yourself, and then after, figure out what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then after, go to university. Because fresh out at MCC, I mean, I wouldn't have been ready for university.
Right.
I mean, when I got there, I was really mature. Like, that's what they were telling me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because when I got to university, like you said, like, it's 18-year-olds, I met, like, 16-year-olds there.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah.
And you can tell the difference.
Yeah,
right?
you could tell the difference, yeah.
He wasn't ready.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it took me, like, about 2 years and, like, I go to different jobs and so on. Like, I basically took in the culture there. And then when I got to university, mm-hmm. I was able to manage my funds, everything, and basically handle, like certain things, like, you just know how to handle it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's an important thing, like, knowing how to handle your own money.
Yeah.
That's another thing that I learned while I was here, because my job out of college was the first job I ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly I was making my own money. It wasn't much, but I was making my own money, and I had to figure out how to survive on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I moved away, I was completely on my own, working at school and, like, finding ways to basically support myself.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was a huge benefit too.
Yeah.
Well, he made mention of how he felt he was wondering, what if I had waited for the other opportunities, mm-hmm. for other schools to reach out to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I always question myself. I'm like, what if I had waited?
Yeah.
What if I had did this differently? What mm-hmm. if I had taken this path instead? But I've come to the realization that everything happens for a reason, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't question where you are. You can't question where you are based on your decisions, basically, if you get what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You're at this moment. I'm in this moment because of the decisions that you made up to this point.
Yeah. Right.
Whether I judge them to be bad or whether I judge them to be good, I'm at this point.
It's done, yeah.
In this moment.
In hindsight,
yeah,
it's just...
Because of the decisions I've made. So I don't think you should ever question... yes, you should say, well, okay, this was kind of a stupid decision.
Yeah.
But I'm proud of a lot of the decisions I've made up until this point. And I'm proud of where I am with the age I have. And a lot of my peers, a lot of stuff I find enjoyment in.
Mm-hmm.
My peers,
they think you're boring or something.
Yeah, but at the same time, I enjoy the things they do, but I just, it's priority.
Mm-hmm.
It's priority. So I won't go party on a Friday and I know I have an assignment due on Monday.
Yeah.
I have to stay up the Saturday and the Sunday to go do the assignment. Nah, I won't do that. Yeah. But that's young people, I guess they say.
Young people. You have an old soul.
I old soul. Don't worry. I don't know. It just makes me spiral into deep thought. And,
I mean, like you said, it's the maturity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Certain things are not your priority, and that's fine.
When he said a lot of big tech companies are kind of grabbing at straws, like Google and Facebook. I've tried many times to understand where Zuckerberg is trying to get to the metaverse.
Yeah.
But I can see the concept succeeding, but at the same time, I can see it failing very easily.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The company makes it sound very profound, as he said.
Mm-hmm.
Now, companies tend to make their products sound very profound, but... what's the real life application? Yes, everything is moving online, but it could just be that Ingrenada we're just so
way
far, way behind.
Yeah.
But are we at that point where we can make a total transition to
virtual reality.
And you stay at home and you put in your glasses and your coworkers are just around you, your boss is there, and you could just take off your glasses, you go on your lunch break in your own house. Are we at that stage? I don't know. As he said, he just feels like at this point they're making up things.
Yeah.
And they just going with it. I actually want to be, as he said, when he said he wants to be where he wants to be in the next 5 to 10 years, I would like to be there at some point in my life as well.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I kind of see myself in him in some ways, like. Yeah, he's very ambitious, as he said. He wants to have property on every continent in the world.
Yeah,
that's very motivational to me as a young person. And to see a fellow presentation making it out there after so much challenges. I'm really motivated. I'm really motivated. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, he did give us a lot of information in that last piece of the video.
Mm-hmm.
But I could relate to a lot of things that he said, basically, at part, like, when he was studying and so on. Like, when you go to study, like, they don't really teach you, like, specifics. Yeah, if you want to get into the specifics, you need to basically focus on your own.
Mm-hmm.
They basically teach you like the basics and so on.
Yeah.
Like because I'm doing computer science and I could relate. I mean, I've done like a bunch of courses like for data systems and architecture and so on. And it's like, I basically learn in the basics.
Mm-hmm.
And if I want to like build anything, I have to go for myself and learn, go on YouTube and so on and learn different programs and so on. He basically gave me a good, like motivation to like find I would like to work remotely as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah.
You understand the glamour of that, like it sounds really cool, you know,
the
to work from here and getting paid from a other company and so on, and basically you're in control of your own hours, it seems like, you know,
almost. Yeah, he clearly works a lot, but
yeah I don't want to wake up in the like and commute, you know.
Yeah
You get
that's
up and you work from your computer and so on.
But to what you just said about the learning on your own in college, that was something I struggled with a little bit, but in hindsight you're like, oh, that was actually helpful to get you thinking in that way. Mm-hmm. But like in architecture school, I went to Illinois Tech, and they threw a lot of things at us, because when I got into the program, actually, they were transitioning into like a more digital type of teaching. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of, there was like coding. We had to learn Python for some different things, like 3D programs. We had to learn Photoshop and a bunch of stuff that I had never really dealt with before. And they didn't teach it to you. They would maybe like show you a couple lines of code, and then they would be like, all right, this is your project. Go figure out how to do it. Mm-hmm. And so we would have to spend hours, like sleepless nights, just YouTube and watching courses and trying to figure out how to, sometimes you're like spending days or weeks trying to figure out how to make this like one line of code work for like this bigger project.
Exactly. Yeah.
You go into a huge rabbit hole just to figure out like one thing. But in hindsight, like, it's not fun when you're like pushing a deadline and losing sleep and can't focus.
But in hindsight,
it's like, oh, now I can easily just like go find anything I want. Like anything I want to learn to do, I'm just like, all right, I'm going to find on YouTube or figure it out in a couple hours. So it's really that idea that school doesn't teach you how to do your job. It teaches you how to function in real life, basically.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because those pressures exist in real life.
Something I've realized through my transition from secondary school to community college, I've realized that they don't ever prepare you for the next level of education. You just feel like you just get rushed into a
way. Just push you along. Like, you're ready. Go.
Go ahead. Like a baby can barely crawl.
Time to walk.
It felt like that.
You put you in the Olympics.
Yeah, from PVC, in PVC, the teachers were very diligent. The teachers were always...
They would spoon feed you, basically.
PVC is a very good school, in my opinion, but they would spoon feed you in a way. And when you reach TAMCC, everybody would be like headless chickens. Well, what to do? Oh my God, I don't know, you know? Everybody would treat, but there's no teachers telling me, okay, I should do this at this time. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to do that in TAMCC. Yep. And I think it's even worse at the university level, because
they teach, and then after
if you don't show up at class, they don't mind. They don't care. One less person to look at.
So I feel like there's no smooth transition. Nobody prepares you for that next level of education. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot that could be done to better that. But let's see what happens.
Let's see. Mm-hmm. Well, discussions like this hopefully could help you figure out what comes next. I think, I don't know, because like I always feel like it's part of the system that works, but when you're in it, you're just like, why would you do this to me? Because that was me like all through college. It's like, why am I paying money to stress myself out? Mm-hmm. It didn't make any sense. But you do learn things at the end of the day. Like, there's probably many better ways that it can be done. But you do gain something from it. So, I don't know. It's double-edged sword.
A lot of people debate that school is a scam. Mm-hmm. That school is a scam, you know? I say to some degree, as you said, why you pay money to stress yourself out and for somebody to just teach you, as you say, one line of code. Mm-hmm. And they tell you, okay, here's your project. Why are you paying money for somebody to do that? You could do that on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Some people say school is a scam, and I agree with them, but it's a scam. This is how the world operates.
Yeah.
No, but the thing is, I'm going to defend school a little bit because, I mean, like, if I didn't go to school, I wouldn't have known that this is where I needed to go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like that. It's basically a push and pull, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I it's a scam, but, like, I see it's like,
You get some benefits.
Yeah. So
they have to put you in the fire.
Yeah, a little bit. You give, you get. You know. Mm-hmm. So, I think a lot of people who dwell on the fact that school is such a ripoff and school is this and that and the other, they're looking for a way out. That's the easy way. Yeah, they're looking for the
get
easy
rich
way
quick.
Out. And that's something that my generation grew up on. Mm-hmm. I always say this. We grew up on people telling us everybody could be a millionaire. Everybody, the TV shows that we watch instilled this ideology of yes, you could be a millionaire. You could do the bare minimum, you know, just luck and faith.
Yeah,
and
that's not how it works. Yeah,
but that's what we were we were taught from a young age. Mm. This was instilled into us, and the products are us. Yeah. Because I see it in my peers that they think the bare minimum would do it, and they have wild dreams and aspirations that they're not taking feasible steps to achieve.
Not gonna work. And
for it. I can't blame them, because this is what we have thought from a young age. Not from our parents. I'm not saying our parents or our teachers to aren't taught this, but the shows we watched, the movies, the celebrities that we looked up to when we were young, they instilled this sense of fiction, this kind of fictional lifestyle in us. Yeah.
On how to get there, you know?
And there's so much content. I think I had this conversation with Kareem that us, like my generation, your generation, compared to our parents' generation, didn't have the same like external factors. They didn't have social media where they could see, you know, what people in Asia were doing with their lives and how all these people are getting rich and spending all this money.
That easy.
Yeah. Right. So they didn't see anything. So all they could do is figure out their life. And they didn't have to compare themselves to other people outside of like their own circle. So, like, that just adds to the stress that we have. I could just be like that person. And you have no idea what went into making that person what they are.
Yeah.
Wild.
I guess you could only focus on what's in front of you. That's what you need to think about. What's in front of you? How to get to that next point in front of you. And don't worry about what other people are doing, you know? Yeah. I mean, you could take a glimpse.
For some motivation, some inspiration.
Yeah, for some motivation. But at the end of the day, it's what's in front of you.
That's the important thing.
Yeah, competing with yourself.
Yeah, competing with yourself better than you were yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yes, 1% better every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Anthony, I know you are dabbling in blockchain in your current degree. So, what are your thoughts on that whole world?
Okay. Yeah, well, he made a good point. Like, it's basically it's easy to show like ownership and so on, but you made a good point as well where you said, what if somebody steals it and adds it to the blockchain before you do? You understand? And that's just something that we need to figure out, you know? But it's like the earlier days of the internet, there was a lot of, like you said, there's a lot of scams that were going on before, and it's only took a while for people to figure out what's really going on. So that's the situation with I think where Web3 is at right now. We're basically in the learning stage of it. It's not like what Web2 is at right now, you know? And some of us are still figuring out Web2.
Exactly.
You understand? So it's at that point.
Yeah, it's just, you know, the cycle, like the cycle of life for technology.
And the thing is, I mean, blockchain is not only Bitcoin. It's like a lot of other things. A blockchain is basically just a database showing that who owns what and so on. And it's basically hashed and encrypted. So it's not easily accessible to be changed and so on.
Right.
So yeah, that's basically what a blockchain is.
So you're pro blockchain?
Not yet.
Not yet. But you could be convinced.
Yes.
What do you think about the whole metaverse idea?
The metaverse idea, I'm not too into it, you know? Like, I would sit down and look at Zoom and, I mean, I wouldn't be comfortable in a Zoom call, but to go into the, let more go into the metaverse. So, it's not really my thing, you know?
I think it's because, like, to Corey's point earlier, I feel like it's maybe it's an early adopter thing. So, like, in the Caribbean and Grenada in general, we're not early adopters. So, like, we wait till that stuff gets figured out, and then eventually
we'll get into it.
Maybe we could do it.
Yeah, but it's kind of like the Matrix, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it's kind of like early future. You know?
Yeah, you weren't expecting it so soon.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it so soon. So it's like the Matrix, but it's kind of early. Yeah.
It's like the whole sci-fi thing, like art imitates life, life imitates art or whatever. Because I don't know if y'all watch Black Mirror.
Yeah, I watch Black Mirror.
It's like that, like things come out in movies and then people try to create it in real life. And so I feel like it's that kind of level where people are trying to make sci-fi real.
Yeah, and science fiction and movies.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
In fact, just over the weekend, one of my friends was telling me that his one of his dad's friends was telling him, listen, you should watch The Matrix to have more insight into the metaverse. And so I was looking at this guy like, what does he say about it was very true.
It's true.
It's built on the same concepts and the same constructs, you know.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean, I think like a lot of people, like, they get inspired by the movies and so on. Mm-hmm. That's how those billionaires are. Like, see Jeff Bezos and so on.
Mm-hmm.
They basically had a dream of going to space, so that's why they're doing like they're trying to work on getting to space and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's basically at a young age they're basically trying to get their dreams come true, you know. But I mean, I still kind of think on the metaverse right now.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm kind of intrigued by it.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would be interesting. I think it could probably work. It might just end up being for like the rich, because mm-hmm. a lot of people use VR tools already.
Yeah, they are,
but not very many people. But the idea that, you know, you could hop into a concert with a friend across the world is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like to do it, but I'm sure there's so many like health effects and side effects of that kind of like people getting stuck in this dream world, and it's like an Inception kind of thing. Like, you don't know what's real and what's not after a while. So
yeah.
I don't know. We'll see where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Karim is a very interesting person, as I stated before. He has a lot of thoughts, and some of which I would like to, you know, I'd like to talk to him a bit deeper
mm-hmm.
sometime in the future, hopefully. Yeah, he's not a boring person, so hopefully if he sees this, he's not boring.
I literally just told him that a while ago. He's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. He's really not. I would like to sit down with him and talk more about the blockchain and cryptocurrency. I don't really understand the blockchain. I'm not going to say sit down here and say I understand it.
No. Yeah.
I understand cryptocurrency and NFTs way better.
If I listen to it, like, 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
maybe I would have been in a different place, but that's just hindsight, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was very informative, and I liked the stories on how, like, he thought his way through on getting where he wants to be and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the process on, okay, getting a remote job and so on, and how long it took him. It actually motivates me to actually try and see if I could follow his route and so on to do that.
Yeah. Nice. Awesome. Well, thank you all for joining. Thanks so much for listening. We would absolutely appreciate your comments and feedback as we try to make this podcast more beneficial for you, our listeners and watchers. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please take a minute to press the review button, let us know how we're doing, and let others know that this is something that's worth their time. We also love to see your comments and engagement on social media, so head over to the post and let us know what you think about this latest episode.